and to bring you your fix of everything related to the Montreal Canadiens. Two men who could seriously use an intervention. Your source of Habs talk, right from the rock.
Right from the rock.
NGK.
Okay, guys, welcome to Season 2, Episode number 13 of the Fix Podcast. My name is Matt, also known as Hockey Junkie, and joining me today is a guy spends most of his time drinking my beer, actually. It's Gary. How's it going, buddy?
It's going pretty good, buddy. I mean, I'm not thirsty these days, I'll tell you that much for sure.
I wouldn't say, jeez.
Man, Slafkovský, hey? He was teasing you. He teased you too, and he didn't just let you down, but he teased you first.
He teased me. Yeah, he scored one right away, and then I thought he was going to get two, and he was going to win me some beer, but no, it didn't happen this time. Never happens.
Yeah, he let you get to second base, and then told you he was saving himself for marriage.
Yeah, it's shitty stuff, man. But you know what? I'm tired too. To add insult to that, I'm tired as well. Remember one time when, like, you know, you could stay up till like 2 in the morning and it didn't matter because you could just sleep in the next day?
Yeah, you sleep till 2 o'clock in the day.
Yeah, man, like, times have changed, eh?
Absolutely, buddy.
I stayed up until 1 o'clock last night watching the Habs and Oilers game, and I don't know about you, man, but I was up again at 7 o'clock in the morning and I felt like a slapped ass.
Is that good or bad?
Oh, it's bad. Okay. It was bad, though. It was a bad slap ass.
Just making sure.
Oh, man, it was a nightmare, though.
No, I 100% agree, man. Once upon a time, you know, it's not even about how much you drink. It's the sleep makes the difference, right? It's all about the sleep. If you can just get that sleep in, you're okay. But the sleep is not an option anymore, you know?
No. Western road trips suck, man. Watching, like, that's one disadvantage. I mean, there's a couple of disadvantages, but, like, living in Newfoundland, you get that extra half an hour too. Like, you just,
yeah, it doesn't help any.
You're up all night, man. Yeah. You're up all night.
And like the game last night wasn't even that bad. It started at 10:30, which is, you know, all right. First two periods, I was like, but I got to be honest, I shut it off for third. I didn't want to, but I was like, you know what? I know what it's going to be, and I did. And now I kind of regret it because it seemed like the third period is when the boys finally woke up and made a game of it.
I should have came over and just started knocking on the door. Get up,
Gary.
We got a goal, man. They actually did pretty good. They came back and made a really good game out of it, actually. Like, they scored 30 seconds into the third period. Slafkovský, you ever hear that song, Pinball Wizard?
Turns out
it was written about Slafkovský. Just friggin' pinballed off of a dozen legs in front of the net. And it ended up being Suzuki's goal, but it was a nice play from Slafkovský. Nice to see him doing good still.
Yeah, nice zone entry, I thought.
Yeah, man, it was a real nice zone entry. And then they went up, made it 2-0. Caden Gooley scored off of a pretty nice shot. And you know what? The Habs had control of the game, man, in the third period, but penalties again. Gee whiz.
It's the story of the year, man. It seemed like the middle part of the season there, they kind of got away with it, you know, away from it a little bit. But lately, it's come back to bite them in the ass again. And their penalty kill is, I mean, they did kill those penalties off. Obviously, took away some momentum, but the penalty kill hasn't been overly good lately, eh?
No. It's been nasty. I didn't tell you either, but I hope everything's good with Marty St. Louis. But I meant to tell you earlier, I got a folder on my computer, and every time the Canadians take a penalty, I've been like getting his reactions, and I've been just like saving them, little short clips,
yeah,
5-second reactions of Marty St. Louis, and I was going to compile them on into one big video. Man, he really doesn't like penalties, man.
No, and like the penalties that they do take sometimes too are, I mean, admittedly frustrating. It's like anytime you take a penalty in the offensive zone or a penalty after you've just turned over the puck or something like that, like that grates on you as a coach, and he doesn't hide it. He's always scratching his head, looking down, he shakes it, and he's looking at the replay. It's just like, oh, Marty, just,
oh yeah,
you see his blood pressure spike. Poor old Marty, though, eh? Like, whatever, I don't know. I mean, don't like to speculate on what's going on with him, and obviously he needs his privacy and he deserves his privacy, but whatever's going on with St. Louis, obviously, hopefully everything works out for him and everybody, you know, in Fix Podcast land, and I'm sure on the Junkietron and everywhere in Habs land, we're all rooting for you, Marty, if you're out there and you're listening to this, so keep your head up, buddy.
He's definitely listening, and yeah, 100%. I'm with Gary. We're thinking about you, and hope everything goes good. There's another guy too, Ada, we got a shout out, right?
Oh, absolutely, man.
Made the logo. I'm going to pop it up on the screen, right? Boom.
Boom. There it is.
You didn't see it, did you?
Not right now, but I'm picturing it in my mind, and it's beautiful.
It is nice.
It's really nice, man. So Junkie and I have been chatting about maybe updating our logo, updating you know, our graphics for our podcast and on our YouTube channel. So I reached out to a friend of mine, Lee Bennett, who does, actually he's like a hobby of his. He does graphic design, and he's an excellent, I mean, amazing artist. And he said, yeah, no problem, man. I'll do something up for you. And he did. And I mean, it looks fantastic. You just saw it there on the screen. If you're watching us on YouTube, and if you're on the podcast, it's also going to be our new, I guess, what do you call that, Junkie? I don't know, the thing you click on, the graphic for our podcast as well. So shout out to you, Lee. Amazing work, and an amazing guy. And I mean, Lee's impressive. He's got twin boys, he's got more kids, he's got more dogs, he runs marathons, he's a great guy. So shout out to you, Lee, if you're listening to this. I mean, we can't really tell you how much we appreciate the work you did for us. And you know, maybe we'll do some work with you in the future. And thanks a lot, man.
Wicked job. Wicked job. And he sent like a few variations too, and like they all look deadly, man. Like,
it's amazing. Well, Lee, I mean, he's amazing. Lee's an engineer, so he's like, he's just one of those guys who's good at everything he does, and an all-around good guy. So shout out to you again, Lee. Graphic looks great, and we'll be using it from now until pretty much, I don't know, the end of the Fix podcast, I think. And yeah.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate it.
He might be a Leaf fan, though.
So, I do. Jeez, Gary, don't be dropping bombshells on me like that.
He was also an Expos fan. So, like, there's one variation that got Yupi in it. I don't know if we're allowed to use that or not, but we will kind of put it up. And so that's where the inspiration for Yupi came from, because he was always an Expos fan.
That's a good one, too.
Absolutely.
That was a good one. We do have some breaking news, though. Wow, kind of breaking news. It happened today. I don't know if you've seen, but Joshua is injured.
Literally breaking news by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it is. Did you hear that, though?
Yeah, I got out indefinitely.
Shot off the hand. Yeah, yeah, man, shot like off the hand.
Brendan Gallagher special.
Oh, the BG special, man. He's probably got the claw going already. Oh, sucks, though. Finger
that
puppets.
That does suck, man. You gotta stop.
The Galleon Wawa puppet show. Why am I laughing?
It's horrible. No, but like, God. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. And I mean, Wawa was playing amazing. You see, like, his underlying statistics are amazing. Like, outside of the top line, he has been our best forward for the last, 10 games or so. Just very impressive for his rookie season. And, you know, it sucks that he's injured right now.
He's going to be missed.
He will be missed. Well, you know what? At the end of the day, as funny as it sounds, because he's only a rookie, you know, new to the league, but like, if you're pro tank, it's great, because who replaces him in your top six?
Oh, it's tough.
Yeah. Ullinen, probably?
No.
Well, who else?
We're not going down that road again, are we?
I got the jersey on right now, man.
No.
Who are you? You tell me who else. Josh Anderson.
Oh, Pizzetta?
Maybe. Michael Pizzetta. No one's coming up from Laval. I guess maybe someone has to, but like, they're on a push. You don't want to see anyone kind of who's like impacting that their lineup come up right now. What's the point?
No, man, I agree. Like, Laval needs its players now, big time. You can't really. Yeah, it's going to be tough.
It is going to be tough.
No, man, you know something? Something freaky. A guy on my Discord server was walking around West Edmonton Mall just like 2 days ago and ran into Samuel Montembeau, Joshua Wawa, David Savard, and Raphael Harvey-Bedard. Like, the French connection, you know what I mean?
Really?
They were all into West Edmonton Mall. He approached them and talked to them, and he said they were just deadly guys, like down to earth. He got his photo taken with all of them. He said David Savard was like a wicked guy, especially for a Wookiee. Like, he was expecting to get attacked or something. just a wicked guy, though. Like,
he seems like a really nice guy.
He does, yeah.
He does. That's so awesome, though, man. Like, because you don't know. I mean, some of these guys, And I mean, whatever, you know, your privacy and whatever else, but it seems some of these guys are really kind of uptight about some stuff like that. But I mean, it's nice for those guys to appreciate their fans and be down to earth and to really kind of take that stuff on. So that's great, man.
Gary, one thing I wanted to talk about from that Edmonton game yesterday, Connor McDavid's goal, man. Oh my gosh, every time I get to see McDavid play, we don't get to see him play very often. Two games a season, maybe, but like, it almost feels like every time you see him, he's just going to do something crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's a cheat code, and it's just, I was talking about this today with somebody, the way he changes gears, the way he, you know, controls the puck with so much speed. Like, there's people in the league who can probably skate as fast as he can skate, maybe, but skate as fast as he can skate and have that much puck control and have that much lateral movement, it's just, there's no one else in the league can match it. And then the shot on top of it and, you know, the hockey sense and everything else. I mean, he's just, he's a special player, there's no doubt.
He is, though. Like, he's one of a kind, ain't he?
He is. Like, he's one of those guys where you look back and you'd be like, man, I remember watching this guy play in his prime and it was amazing. And he's that kind of guy. You know, Crosby, I think in his prime was like that too, in a different way. You know, down low, Crosby dominated the puck, and with his vision and his shooting, his creativity probably, even maybe more so than McDavid. McDavid is just, he is creative too, don't get me wrong, but like, it's just a raw, natural talent that he's got, and the speed and the rate at which he can do things that really just blows you away. And there's no one in the league who can match him. It's amazing to watch. So, you know, I still think he's a little whiny sometimes, but that's all right. I mean, he's entitled. He can do what he wants. He's Connor fucking McDavid.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
And he's explosive too, man.
Oh, like, man. It's unreal.
Like the speed of diarrhea. And, you know what he reminds me of, though?
Yeah, what? You go first, and then I'll say mine.
I'll tell you what he reminds me of. Like, did you play like NHL 99 or like NHL 2002 or whatever back in the day? Yeah, man. Well, like, remember when you like created a player and you like boosted your stats up to 99? Every stat?
Absolutely.
And you just say this insane player? What? That's like what Connor McDavid is.
Essentially, that's what he is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like he looks like he's a freak compared to everybody else.
And then like you had that speed burst button on the top. He's got that too, right?
Like he's got that one going.
Yeah, he's like flying, and you think that's all he's got, and then he like adds that extra gear, and the defenseman's like, "What the f- is going on here, man?" I thought I had him. It's not fair. It's not fair. I also thought that, like, I think it was Kane in front of the net. No, it wasn't. It was Hyman in front of the net, who was kind of set to pick pretty hard on Madison on that play too. Like, there's no way Madison could have closed down that lane even if he wanted to, which is, you know, I mean, that's part of the game, but I don't like it.
We should get into the officiating a bit, man, because there was a lot of controversies in that game. Like, two ways, too. Like, I seen, like, Alex Newhook kind of went down a little bit easy, too, on a Darren Onuris penalty. I think that was in, like, the first period, maybe, or the second period.
There when he went behind the net, right?
Yeah, he went down a little easy, and I know Habs fans were giving it to Brit Kulak because he went down easy, too, on a Slavkovsky penalty.
Yeah.
But the big one was the Joel Armia four-minute double minor for high sticking, and his stick wouldn't have even been up if Evander Kane didn't interfere with him to begin with.
Mm. I know.
It was weird, man.
It's a weird one. The thing is like, they don't mess around with that rule, though. Like, it's like, you're responsible for your stick, regardless of anything else that happens. You know what I mean? Look at Suzuki's four-minute layer last week. Essentially, Putty, like, hit his elbow and drove his stick into, I forget whose face it was, four-minute penalty right off the hop. His stick wouldn't be anywhere near Buddy's face, only for he got hit with a puck. Same play, almost, as that play there last night. So, I mean, it's like the puck over the glass rule, you know? Sometimes it's stupid. Sometimes it puts teams down by two goals, but at the end of the day, you're responsible for your stick, and it's a penalty, and it sucks, but that's the way it is.
This is what I didn't like about it, though.
Hit me. Not literally.
There was no call on the play.
Yeah, I know.
There was no call on the play originally, right? This is okay. Now they're going to review it. So they go and review it, and they see Evander Kane, like, but it's interference, too. Like, if you're going to call one, then I feel like it should have been a 2 minute somehow. Like, you know what I mean? Maybe 4-on-4 for 2 minutes, and then a 2 minute power play for Edmonton, the double minor high sticking. But I feel like Evander Kane should have got something, too. If you're going to blow down the play, have a look at it, then they should have called everything because it was blatant interference too.
It was, but interference is not a reviewable play.
You know, it's not?
No. So the only reason they reviewed the play is because he was bleeding. Had he not been bleeding, they wouldn't have been able to review it in the first place.
Oh, okay, so it's just shitty all over.
Shitty all over. So they reviewed it because he was bleeding, and then because he was bleeding, they assessed him a 4-minute, and it was a high stick, regardless of whether it was intentional or not. Obviously, it wasn't. But then they can't review the interference. So even if they saw it, and which obviously they did, they can't go back and call it, so it doesn't matter. That's like one of their goals. Their first goal, too, like the McDavid goal, was icing. It should have been called an icing. And they had reviewed icing earlier and called it back and had to face out center ice. But they couldn't review that one because it was a goal on the play. So,
yeah, man.
It's shitty officiating. The interference should have been seen in the beginning and should have been called. That's the issue. Like, it was the puck's right there. So, how do you not call the interference call? But then you got to go back and review with the high stick. So, well, I agree. It's shitty all around. That's
disappointed
why.
In Mario Army. He should have pulled out a razor and made himself bleed or something.
Something he would have done.
They got to be packing razors. Wrestlers do it. Jeez, man.
Army is not the type.
No, he's not. No.
He's definitely not.
He's been playing good, though, eh?
Man, since his relegation to the AHL, he's been consistently good. Like, hard on the puck. I mean, not setting the world on fire with points, but his production is there. Like, he scores a goal every now and then. He's putting up good assists. But his defensive play, he's on the penalty kill and looks fantastic. He's got confidence with the puck again. He's not like, man, there was times last year where if you passed to Armia in the neutral zone, you might as well just dump it back in your own end because it was going nowhere. And really, like, we talked about it. But now he looks comfortable. He looks confident again. And he talked about, like, the work with the, I don't know what the technical name is, but, like, essentially, like, the sports psychologist, you know, about how to, like, let things go and not focus on the last game and your last bad play and stuff like that and how big of a difference that has made to him. And it's like, wow. What? I mean, it's transformational. He looks worth his contract right now.
Which is
about as all you can ask for him. And that's good in two ways. One, it's either this team is going to need steady, like, veterans who can produce or who can play their role, like steady role-playing veterans moving forward. They're going to need that because they're a young, up-and-coming team. So either you extend him and he can continue to do that. Now, honestly, I don't know if I would bet on that because he's been fairly inconsistent since he's come to Montreal, fairly up and down. Or he's going into his UFA season and he plays fantastic next year. And he actually built some value for himself, which is something you wouldn't have been able to say all last season and half of this season. So, to me, if he continues playing this way, it's a win-win. Regardless whether they move him or keep him and he becomes a mentor, I'm happy with it. So, I don't know what they gave him in Laval, because they did the same thing with Arbor Jack guy. Since he's come up from Laval, he's looked fantastic. He's been one of the better defensemen. His game has been transformed. Armia's game was transformed, so I don't know if there's something in the Kool-Aid, something in the water in Laval, but that's what a farm team is supposed to be. And for decades, ours hasn't been that. But it looks like it might be that now, like a place where you can go and learn and grow, which is the idea. So it's awesome, man.
Oh, I love it. I love it, though. It sounds promising, right?
Yeah.
No Reinbacher's there.
Yeah. So maybe we should just go ahead and talk about David Reinbacher. So, like, he's there now. He's going to be playing with Friday, is it? His first game, maybe? And
Friday, yeah.
You know, he just came over from Clodagh over in the NL. And, you know, he's here now. We've been waiting for him. We've been talking about him. We haven't seen a lot of him. Nobody's seen a lot of him because he hasn't played a lot of hockey. And when he has, it's been with a team that has been disappointing, to say the least, this season.
It was a pretty disappointing season over there. But I'm just so happy to see him over here now and get to see him play a few games too in the American Hockey League, and hopefully they can do some good stuff with him too, like we were talking about earlier, like they did with Armia and Jacki. I mean, I'm excited, man. And originally I was thinking he was only going to get, you know, bottom pair of minutes, but he's been practicing with Toby Bisson, and Bisson is top four D-man, right? He plays on the second pairing normally, so he might actually get a few minutes after all.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, man, he's going to get tossed right into it.
Apparently so. I mean, I like that. I mean, he's got pedigree and he's got everything that you want to see. I mean, Laval needs – they need guys to play in their top four down there. I'm just wondering, like, you got Barron, you got Meliu, and you got Reinbacher on the right side. It's like it's the reverse of what's going on in Montreal, really, because we got all left-handed defensemen. So, like, you think you're going to move one of those guys to the left side? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I think they're going to keep Mal on the right. I'm pretty sure.
They can't all play in the top four. Who's going down to that bottom pairing? You think Barron's going to go down to the bottom pairing?
Oh, I know what you mean now. I was freaking asleep there. yeah, I think Barron's going to go down to the bottom pairing, man.
Because, like, the left side down there is a bit... I mean, the right side is all where all the big names are. Now,
yeah,
don't get me wrong. Big, young names, that doesn't always translate to success in the AHL. But, like, if you look at that defense score in Laval right now, and it's Reinbacher, Barron, and... Meliu on the right, Norlander is probably the only name you're going to recognize on the left.
Yeah,
and unless you've been following.
Yeah, and he's like sitting out quite a bit too sometimes, so he's in and out. And I don't know, man. I'm starting to lose hope for him. I know what you mean. Yeah,
like down there, if you're going to relegate a guy to the bottom pairing, and your best three defensemen are on the right. Do you put one of them on the left?
Potentially. I mean,
maybe.
It could happen, but I don't think it's happening right off the hop. Because if Bisson is playing with Reinbacher and Trudeau is there too. Yeah.
Wow.
Trudeau's down there too, right?
I forgot about Trudeau. Yeah, so I don't know. So yeah, if Barron takes a back seat, that'd hurt.
That's pretty big though, isn't it?
It is big. I mean, it speaks a lot to what they think of Reinbacher. And it also comments on what they think of Barron potentially.
I like it though. I like that they're going to give Reinbacher a few minutes to begin with, like just to test him out, see where he's at.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just like in Laval right now. Like it's do or die time in Laval. So if they're going to put him on the second pairing, they must legitimately think he gives them a better chance to win than whoever he's displacing. Maybe so. He's got the pedigree for it. He's a big boy and he can shoot and he can skate and he hasn't showed a lot of that through this season. But I mean. I love that they're giving them a chance to do it.
You going to be watching the games? You going to try and watch them?
If I can do it, I will for sure.
Yeah, so, man. You know,
get on there.
The Habs don't even play on Saturday. This is going to be a weird weekend.
I hate when the Habs don't play on Saturday.
I know, man. It feels weird, don't it? It's like getting in the shower with your socks on.
I had one time, Junkie. Come on.
it's funny. Yeah, man, it is weird, though. Like, everybody looks forward to Hockey Night in Canada. Come on, I mean.
They do. I hate when Montreal doesn't play on a Saturday. And now they're playing, like, 12 o'clock tomorrow, what, 12:30 tomorrow night in Newfoundland?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to watch.
It is. It's going to be, yeah.
I would only actually get to watch, like, two periods of that. There's no way I'm watching hockey.
The only thing bright side for me is that usually, like, I play hockey on Thursdays, and usually I get home and the game is, like, 90% over. Tomorrow night when I get home, the game is going to be like just starting. So, you know, it might be good. Sometimes you're a bit wired from playing hockey.
Yeah, so I was thinking you'll probably have a little adrenaline rush going.
I will.
You know, it's not bad. It's pretty good.
Yeah, a few dressing room beers and way to go.
Gary, we didn't talk a whole lot about Juraj Slafkovský, man, but he's up to 19 points now in his last 21 games. Just clicking every single night on the first line. It seems like you can always count on him for a point.
He's in the mix of it all the time, man.
He is, yeah. And now Caulfield scored a big goal a couple of games ago. He's finally got his 20th goal of the season. But I'm going to ask you something. How many points do you feel like Slafkovský could possibly put up next season? Like, do you feel like he's going to continue on now? Like, He's had a really good stretch of games. Like, do you think this is the player that you're going to see in the future consistently, or do you think that he could possibly regress?
Right now, I think the almost point per game pace he's been doing over the last 20 games or so is probably a bit unrealistic. If you come next season hoping he's going to be a point per game player, you're going to be disappointed, I think. But I think, like, you know, the 60-65 point range is reasonable for him, even at this stage in his career. And I mean, if you look at the progression he's had over the last, you know, even the last 60 games of his career, really, if you look at it as like not even a full season, but look at the last 60 games, and he's taken a massive step. He's shown that he's a student of the game. He's shown that he's willing to put in the work and do whatever the coach asks him to do. You know, he'll look at whatever video. He looks like a very coachable player who implements what he's been taught and what he's been shown. Plus, he's, you know, if he was only that, it wouldn't be so good, but he's also got all this natural ability. Like, he's big, he's strong, he can skate, he can shoot the puck. So when you take coachability and natural skill and put those things in a package together, then you can see progression that you don't even expect sometimes. So to me, I think like 60, 65 points next season is very attainable for him. I mean, I'd like to see a 30 goals, 35 assists, but I think that might be maybe a little bit unrealistic. But like 25 goals and 40 assists, if he's playing on top pairing, I think is definitely doable, especially if Caulfield rounds into form. So I can see that kind of progression for him. What do you think?
Man, if he does get like 60, 65 points, like I'll be doing cartwheels. Like that's huge, especially for a 20-year-old. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like that would be wicked. Like I could see him doing it too. Like I wouldn't bet against him.
Oh, well, I mean, you look at the pace he's on for the last, like I said, last 40 games, he would blow that out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's been doing pretty good now for, you know, a good stretch of games. So I'm pretty much right on par with that. I'd say 60 would be like that's my happy spot. Absolutely. I'm happy there. Yeah, well, but I mean, even if it's 50, I'm happy, really. You, just like, took you know what I mean?
Anything above 50 points, I think, for next season, I'd be happy with. And I'd be ecstatic if he hit the 60-plus point plateau, or well, I don't want to say plateau, because he'd go beyond that. But if he hits that point, then I'll be happy.
What about lines? Like, I know we talked about it a bit before, breaking up Caulfield with Suzuki. Like, I think we were debating about that before, weren't we?
Oh, we've talked about that a million times before, especially especially last season when it was iffy. Like, you know, they weren't doing well. They didn't have the Slavkovsky factor in there, so it was like, who are we going to put up on that line was a big question mark. Who's going to play on the outer wing? I mean, right now it's more like just a matter of mix and match when the season begins next season. Is there going to be another top six forward in the mix, you know? And hopefully, I think most Habs fans out there are hoping that whether it be Macklin Celebrini because we won the draft, or, you know, maybe Caden Lindstrom for a few games before he gets sent back down to the CHL or sticks, you know, that there's a new or a trade, a massive trade that happens. And I think you and I both are kind of on the maybe it's time to move some of these assets and bring in that top six, hopefully top three guy who's going to be elite. And so to me, there's almost too many variables right now to say who's going to play in that top six.
Last weekend when I was driving to Bay Roberts for the tournament. Pretty good tournament, by the way, wasn't it?
It was a good time. I enjoyed it.
It was a really good time. I was listening to the Sick podcast on the way in, and I think Maxime LaPierre was on there.
Beauty.
And I'm pretty certain this is what he went with, because he was asked a pretty similar question by Tony. He was asking him, like, you know, how would your top six look going forward with a completely healthy lineup, right? Fair. And he kind of went off base. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
I did not.
No, well, this is going to be fun. He said he'd have Nick Suzuki at center, Juraj Slavkovsky on the left wing, and Kirby Dach on the right wing for the top line. And he'd have Alex Newhook and Cole Caulfield on the second line with somebody else, somebody that they're bringing in. And he said that having two big bodies on the wing like that with such a high IQ player like Suzuki in the middle, he said that's your playoff line right there. That was his take on it, but it kind of got me, like, you know what I mean? It kind of threw me off a bit. Yeah, man, it did. But it was the way he brought it up and the way he explained it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, Martin St. Louis doesn't seem like the kind of coach who's going to be stuck. Like, you know, just because something's working or has worked in the past, he seems like a guy who's willing to try things. You know what I mean? Now, it might take him a few games, but he'll try it every now and then. So that wouldn't overly surprise me. That being said, I mean, I like Alex Newhook in the middle. I think it lets him utilize his speed. He's obviously, he's gotten better on the face-offs than he was kind of to begin a year. And you know, the more reps he gets, kind of the better he looks there. He looked really good with Joshua Waugh playing, you know, together. And Armia has been a nice compliment piece on the other side. But I'm not sold that the best position for Newhook is going to be up the middle long-term. And if Newhook is your second-line center, and I mean, Newhook's a Newfoundlander, and I love him, all the pieces there.
You're weak down the middle, aren't you?
Yeah, you're weak down the middle. If Newhook is your second-line center, then you're not a playoff contender. You know, you might have your playoff line on the top line, but you need to fill out that bottom six. So maybe the guy you bring in, you know, the thing you trade for, the guy you draft, or this other top six forward, this elusive top six forward that we're kind of all alluding to, but we haven't had and we don't have yet. Maybe that guy's a center. And then it's, you know, it's Newhook on the wing with player X and who's the guy on the other side?
Caulfield,
yes. So maybe it's, you know, it's Newhook and Caulfield on your wings. So you get speed to burn on one side and a lethal shot on the other. And then our player X is in the center.
Zegras.
I don't know about that either.
Man, there'd be a lot of goals going every which way.
Like, yeah, you are not kidding. You are not kidding. To me, if Zegras comes in, I think Suzuki might be your better settle-down centerman than for him. But anyways, we're getting way off track now. But I appreciate what LaPierre is saying, and I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's right in saying that if that happens and we're a playoff team, that Newhook is the second-line center. I think if Newhook's playing your second line, then he should be on the wing, and there needs to be a bona fide second line legitimate center playing center. That's just my thoughts.
No, I'm with you on that, man. I like Suzuki and Doc as the 1-2. I don't know, like, it just sounds a lot better to me, right? Doc is the big guy, the big centerman, and plus during the preseason this year, man, unreal. Just, he was lights out. I'm still not over it, man. Like, I know. Pissed off.
Yeah, I was kind of iffy on him playing center, like up until when this season started, or even towards the end of last season, he started to come into his own a little bit more. His shot started to come back, and he started to win some faceoffs. And we talked about his wrist injury and maybe how even mentally, I think his wrist injury was holding him back a little tiny bit. And he seemed to be kind of getting over that before he got injured, you know, to begin this season. So to me, you know, as the lineup is now, I think, all right, fine. If Doc comes down and plays in the second line center role, I'd be all right with that. I think he could do well also up on that top line with those two big boys and Suzuki. But that leaves your center depth weak, I think. Like, and I love Alex Newhook. I think he's a great player. And I think, you know, he's got a lot of good assets, but I don't think he's a legit number two center in the NHL, not at this stage in his career.
No. No, you're right, man. Yeah, Maxime just got shut down big time.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Maxime is, I mean, I respect his opinion as well. But
he's going to be okay.
I don't necessarily agree.
He's okay. He's going to be okay.
Tony Marino really should have me on the Sick podcast, and he hasn't asked me yet. I'm a bit sour about it. I mean, not going to lie.
Listen, I'm pretty sure it's been getting sent to the wrong mailing address.
It must be, you know, at the end of the day.
Courier. It's got a little pigeon
whatever.
Going around.
Maybe I'm not loud enough.
Yeah.
Get a few beers in me for the next podcast, and I'll get an invite.
There you go.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's what you got to start doing. How many you got in you now?
We're not going to put that number out there.
18?
No.
I'm on. Mine.
All yours. Oh, and it would be all yours, too. You know, I haven't lost a beer bet to you in forever.
I'm still sour, man. It's too early. It's too early for that. Defenseman, Gary. There's defensemen everywhere. Oh, if you noticed that or not. My jeez, man. You could go inside the Bell Center and tear down drywall and defensemen just start falling out everywhere, man. I'm telling you, they got Adam Engstrom is going to be coming into the mix next offseason. David Reinbacher's here now. Lane Hutson is on his way in a little kennel. He's probably on an airplane now, right at the bottom of the kennel. They got Daniil Sobolev I know, that's a random name to throw out, isn't
it? I'm all for random names. We're here to educate people, Junkie.
Do you know something? What? I've been watching Florian Jacky like, oh man, like crazy. I watched probably, I don't know, his last 6 out of 7 games. And as I'm watching him, like, I'm watching the game to watch Florian Jacky, right? But Daniil Sobolev, man, just stands out every game too. As he's on fire, man. He's doing deadly. He's putting up a lot of points now. I mean, last season I think he had 9 points. This season he's already up to, I want to say, in the high 20s in points. But not only that, he's making shit happen every game too, and he's feisty too. Just a feisty little bastard of a defenseman. And nobody talks about him, but he's only 21. I think he was drafted in the 5th round in 2021. I could see a spot for him in Laval in the future. Like, and he's a fun player to watch. Like, he's actually pretty fun.
Man. Sorry. Man, like, as far as the OHL goes, whenever you get your teeth into a player, I always get behind you. Ever since Arbor Jacky, you know. Arbor Jacky was on nobody's radar. He was on your radar, and you nailed it. I mean, you were as right as right can be about him. You probably started talking about Florian before anyone else did, although I think when we drafted him, he kind of got on everyone else's radar, but I think you mentioned him even before the draft. And, I mean, I'll just take your word on this kid. I haven't watched a lot of him. I've been following, looking at statistics, and not a lot of Habs pundits have been kind of mentioning his name, but I mean,
no, he's been doing crazy.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. he's got my attention. And like, he's only got my attention because I've been watching these games. If I haven't been watching the games, then I wouldn't, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be talking about him. But now he's got my attention because I'm watching him, and he's done really good, man. Like I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's playing in Laval even next season. Like, he could potentially be there. More likely the season after, but like, he's that kind of player. Like, he's got so many tools, right? He's not just one-dimensional.
Which is exactly what you see. And that same growth that we saw in Florian Jacky, you know, we're seeing this kid now this year. You know, it's that, you know, you want to see as they get older and as they get, you know, well, age makes such a difference in the CHL. You know what I mean? Like, a year older in NHL sometimes doesn't make that big of a difference, but a year older in CHL makes a massive difference a lot of times. Yeah. So you want to see, if you're getting older, you should also, your production should take that step. And sometimes that's how you kind of get great prospects. They get that year older, and even if they played fantastic, but it hasn't improved from the season before, you say, well, they haven't taken a step forward, and that's a red flag. So any guy who kind of exceeds expectations season to season, you know, that's obviously a green light to say, you know what, maybe we need to pay better attention to this guy, and he definitely fits the bill.
Florian Jacky does too, eh?
Oh, 100%, like, yeah.
Look at last season, man, and now this season, the production. It's crazy. Like, man, his point totals went through the roof. Well, watching those games has been fun, man. He's a good player. He's doing really well.
He's got a lot of tools. And anytime you can kind of look at it, and even a year later, and say, man, if they did a redraft right now, the guy you picked in the 4th round would probably go either late 1st round or early 2nd. Like, I mean, that's solid. Regardless if they ever play in the NHL or not, that's still a good sign of, you know, a good scouting staff who identified something in a player that maybe a lot of guys miss. So that's great.
Not only that, speaking of that draft too, Bogdan Konyushkov's doing really well. And Volokhin, the other goal. Everybody's talking about Jacob Fowler and how good Fowler's been doing, but where was it I read that to? Was it Godin? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the guy that does the podcast with Basu, right? With Arpan Basu. Yeah. He made an article saying that he's been talking to some people in the Canadiens organization that believe that Volokhin's got a higher ceiling or more potential than Jacob Fowler. Some of them are just that high on him. But I mean, in all fairness, if they drafted him, well, they got to be high on him. You know what I mean? Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have got him in the first place. But
no,
but still, it's pretty neat to say that, you know, some of them have him higher than Jacob Fowler.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not like that's a low bar, because Jacob Fowler's putting up an excellent season in the NCAA right now. He's putting up a really good season in NCAA. And Volushkin is playing in the MHL, which is like the equivalent of the AHL in Russia. So like, you know, KHL would be the NHL and the MHL is the league below that. But putting up like historical numbers in that league. Not an overly offensive league by most standards, I think, but still he's putting up numbers that you haven't seen from a guy his age in a while. And it's interesting when you look at Hughes' drafting strategy over a little while with his late picks, especially coming out of COVID. And I think that's played a role. You know, I don't know if he'll continue on that kind of trajectory over the next little while, but when you look at his strategy over his two drafts, he has historically taken overagers or like guys who are in their second draft in the later rounds as opposed to just taking nobody. So like either late bloomers or, I mean, with COVID on the go, you got to think that maybe there's a lot of kids out there who kind of slipped through the cracks. And it seems like Hughes and Gordon have tried to kind of identify those guys and kind of target them as opposed to just letting them go. And it looks like it might be paying off like massively. I'm a Bogdan Konushka. And you got Volkolin, sorry, you know, ruining his name. But there's a lot of players that kind of fit that bill. So I mean, there's some method to the madness there, I think, and I like it a lot.
Me too, man. It's fun to watch, and I mean, now it's 2024 draft coming up. It's a whole new ball game, man. Like who knows what kind of approach they're gonna take. This draft, man, like, I'm hyped.
Yeah, you and me
both. I'm all in, man. Like, I'm hyped. Like, even more hyped than last year. And last year, I was pretty hyped. I don't know if you can remember. But
I remember you being hyped last year.
Oh, man, I was on wheels.
Well, I think the thing about last year's draft was, like, you were going in. You knew you weren't going to pick in the top four. So going into the draft ladder, you were hoping you were going to move up. And then we didn't. And there was such a kind of a fall off for offensive players after four. Like you had, well, obviously, Bedard, you had Smith, you had, Mishkov obviously was the kind of red herring there. You had Carlson and you had, Columbus picked him, Fantilli. Like those were the four big guns. Chances are they were going to go before we got a chance to pick. And sure enough, they did. Mishkov, you know, it was a stretch. Most people said, no, we're not going to get him regardless. Either he's not going to beat her or they won't take him. And they were right. And they took the defenseman. And it was surprising, but maybe not as surprising to anyone who was listening. Anyone who listened to Grant McKeag, for sure. Kind of never never really took us by surprise. A bit disappointing, maybe, but not overly surprising. This year's draft is different. It's very different, especially for any team who wants an offensive forward, in that there's so many defensemen who people are very high on, that there's a few forwards who in a different draft would be like locked to go in the top three, top two, who could easily fall to five, could easily fall to six even. And that's the range we're looking to pick in. So, like, this draft has got so much potential that, like, you can get a name that you're hoping for and not have to get a super high pick. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
It's freaky, man, because, like, last year, looking ahead to this year's draft, like, there was a lot of talk about Cole Eiserman. And, I mean, Eiserman's dropped quite a bit on a lot of rankings. Now, Pierre McGuire said the other day that Eiserman is exactly what Montreal needs. That's what I heard him say. And I thought it was interesting because he is a pure goal scorer. Like, I was looking at a lot of highlights of him, like, over the last couple of years, and geez, man, he's got such a wicked release. But it freaks me out still that he's fouling a lot. And then there's guys like Caden Lindstrom. I remember last year, like, I can't even remember seeing his name. He might have been middle of the pack or something, but he's climbed up a lot, like, to the point where, you know, he could even go second overall, man. Like, it depends on who's
picking,
who's up to the plate. Yeah,
and then he could go seven.
Yeah, you don't know, and if he does, like, he could be a Habs.
He could be, like, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, even if say it's 1-2 forwards go, all right, 1-2 forwards go, it's going to be Celebrini. It's going to be, but who's two? Like,
Walker over water.
maybe, I don't know. You'd have to be a walker over water to predict who's going to be a two, because it could be Demidov, it could be Lindstrom, it could be one of like 3 to 4 defensemen, depending on who you ask. Easerman's fallen out. Then you got Cadden is kind of there. His name is out there all over the place. I'm sure
Aginla's name.
His pedigree is there, and his stock is rising up too, right? So there's a bunch of guys who just like who fit the bill of what Montreal needs, in that they're offensive catalysts. Now maybe they're not, maybe they're not the 40 goal 100 point guys, but they do bring elements to the game that Montreal would need. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And like I said, but Easerman is like, he's challenging Caulfield's record in the NCAA for most goals in a single season or in a career or whatever it is. But still, teams are going to maybe take a pass on him. It's like they didn't get the lesson from passing on Caulfield, because that was the same. Caulfield is the same story almost over again. I don't think he's not so undersized as Caulfield was, because very few players are. But he's a guy who's slightly smaller, and he's putting up massive offensive numbers, and teams are looking at him, picking apart his game. I think maybe they're overthinking him a little bit, and I think he's going to make some team happy. I don't know if it's going to be Montreal, but some team is going to be very happy to pick him, and he's going to prove a lot of people wrong, in my opinion.
Do you got a favorite? Like, outside of Celebrini, is there a guy that's on your radar that, like, Gary's taking no matter what? Like,
not no matter what, but at 5, which I think is our, unless we win the lottery, like that's our best case, is 5.
Yeah.
Or at 6 or at 7. So at any point after 5, if Demidov is available, I want him.
Man, you picked the same guy I was gonna say. No.
At 2, I'm iffy. But at 4, 5, 6, 7, if Demidov is there, because I don't think Lindstrom won't be there. Like, they won't both be there, in my opinion.
No.
So to me, it's Lindstrom or Demidov, if at all possible. At 2, still maybe those guys for me. But if one of those defensemen is just blowing everyone's mind, and it's undeniable that he should go before them, then it's not an easy decision to make. But I mean, you can't just turn away from a generational defensive talent if he's there.
Breaking my balls, Gary. Breaking my balls.
You know what I'm saying, though.
I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying. Like, 100%. If there's a guy who's going to be, if it's next, Lindstrom are there, if it's next Victor Hedman is there, or the next guy who's going to be, a difference maker on defense, a legit all-around stud on defense, which, even though we've got a great defensive core, and we do have a fantastic young defense core, we don't have that legit stud guy. We don't. So if that's there, then maybe you take a swing. But at 6 or 7, that guy will be gone. But one of Demidov or Lindstrom could still be there. And if they are, that's my guy. And I think maybe Demidov over Lindstrom. And I know you might disagree with that, but that's my guy.
No, Demidov's a wicked choice, man. Like, just looking at his highlight reels, they keep popping up on Twitter. Like, every 10 minutes, you look on there, you hit refresh, and all of a sudden, there's a new Demidov highlight reel, and he's just whipping around players, man.
I know.
Making everybody look like pylons. And even McKay is high on him. You know what I mean?
That speaks volumes, man.
That's crazy, man. McKay was like, you know what I mean? Everybody was high on Michkov, me included, last year. I was head over heels for him. But McKay was like very reluctant to give him any praise at all. But Demidov seems like a completely different story.
Absolutely. And different story around the league. Like, all the question marks and worries that were around Michkov, for whatever reason, because, I mean, the situation in Russia has changed a whole lot. Maybe we got a little bit more viewing of players over there. I'm not sure. But nothing's really changed from my perspective. But none of those red flags are around Demidov like they were around Michkov.
Must be a video of Michkov like shitting in a urinal or something,
man. But you know what? I mean, all right. So Demidov, I would also be very happy with Lindstrom. Just going to put that out there. Like, regardless, he was injured and his stocks after falling a little bit. But I would be very happy with him. But Michkov, man, he's done nothing but say, I'm still here since he's been drafted. Like, he's looked good.
Oh,
he's put up numbers. Like, for all the reluctance there was to take him, last year, he's kind of looking at people and saying, like, you didn't need to be worried, man. I'm still awesome. Really, he is. Man, like, he still looks fantastic, hey, even if it's D1 year. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, even though teams were reluctant and McCaig was right that teams wouldn't take a swing at him, doesn't necessarily mean that they were right not to take a swing at him.
No, it's going to be – that's going to be a really fun draft to track over the next few years, like, to see what happens.
You know what, man? It's not going to matter. You know why it's not going to matter? Because I got a feeling. It's not that tonight's going to be a good night, but I think it is. Is we're going to win the draft lottery.
Oh, man.
We are. Like, I just got, like, it's a feeling I got. We're just going to get down. Montreal's going to be supposed to be picking 7. The draft lottery's going to come. And there's not going to be any Habsyn will come up. And it's going to go down, and we're going to win the draft lottery. And that's what's going to happen. Macklin Celebrini, Lane Hutson, are both going to be in our lineup next year, and we won't be worried about who's going to be our second line center because we already know the answer.
Yo, that'd be sick, man. You know what? I love the suspense, though, of the draft lottery. Really, if the Canadians are sitting like in like fifth land, you know what I mean? Like, as soon as you get to seventh, you're like, you're watching the screen, your heart just starts like skipping a beat. Like, please don't be the Canadians.
Absolutely. I'm there. Jack is watching it with me, my little fella. He's like, we don't want this to be Montreal. He's like, why, Dad? I was like, we just don't. Don't ask questions. We just don't. I'll explain to you later. Oh,
man, it's going to be fun. I can't wait. I don't think they released a date yet, but...
No, me. I can't wait. No, you're going to ask me about me Cole Caulfield.
Caulfield, man. He's got 20 goals now. He finally scored a goal. He went on a bit of a cold. You know, he had some snowflakes on him.
He did.
He finally potted his 20th goal of the season. I mean, if somebody said last year that at this point in this season... Suzuki will be closer to 30 goals than Caulfield, we probably would have laughed, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds a bit unbelievable, but here we are, and Suzuki is outscoring Caulfield. He's just coming off his shoulder surgery. There's a lot of people saying that, you know, maybe he's struggling a bit, kind of like he did under Dominique Ducharme. Maybe now he's struggling under St. Louis. Maybe he's going to go crazy for Lutowski or whatever his name is. No, I doubt it, but... What I'm trying to say is, do you feel like his shoulder surgery had a significant impact on the way that he's been playing right now? Gary is a physiotherapist, by the way, and he specializes in shoulders.
That, right? That last part's not true, but yeah, I'm a physiotherapist.
Okay, go ahead. Take it away.
My answer to this is kind of it's two-part answer. One is that, do I think that Caulfield's shoulder surgery this summer has impacted his point total this year? And the answer to that is yes, I do think that it has played a role. Now, I think there's a bunch of factors that played a role in his point total this year, and that's one of them. I think that, you know, recovering from a shoulder surgery, not so much that the shoulder's not good and won't be good moving forward, but you didn't have the, you know, you didn't have the preseason you would have normally had. You didn't have the, you know, you didn't have the warm, you know, the off season that you would have typically had. So there's a bunch of factors that kind of change and impact you coming into the season. So I think that had impact on him. And I think, you know, the same as we talked about Doc's wrist earlier, you know, about influences his shot, influences his face offs. It's not so much that it's not strong enough or that it's not good enough. It's that you don't trust it enough, and you know, your mechanics are off, and it just influences your game that much. It's in your head a little tiny bit. So I think that to that extent, it did influence his point totals this year. I also think that trying to be a more well-rounded player, trying to be more defensive, and not just trying, but succeeding in being more defensive and a more well-rounded player has kind of had a little bit of effect on his point totals as well. And I think a little bit of luck as well. You know, goals that would have normally gone in for Caulfield in years past, maybe haven't. You know, he's hit a few posts, he's had a few bad luck plays. I think that's influenced his point totals. And I also think that the power play being, you know, really bad to start the season and off and on throughout the season has influenced his totals. And that teams focusing in on him on the power play and taking him away as an option has also influenced his totals. So I do think that the shoulder has played a role. I don't think it's been maybe as significant as what we got to worry about. And I also think that while it influenced him this season, he didn't miss a game because of his shoulder this year. You know, he hasn't been injured. He hasn't been down. I think that without doubt, the shoulder issue will resolve itself. You know, I think that another season, a full good off season of rehab, well, not rehab, but just training and getting back into his groove. To me, I'm not worried for long term for that shoulder injury to be something that's going to be an issue. You know, it's just one of those things where this season there was so much on the go. It was a factor, and I don't think that it will be a factor moving forward. It just takes some time to build stability, build strength, and more than anything else, just build confidence in that shoulder again. And you see that time and time again. So, you know, it was there, but I think it's gone now.
Man, that was a wicked answer. So you're not worried?
I'm not worried long term about it. No, like I said, to me, if it was going to influence him long term, he would have missed games this season. If it was still bothering him, he'd have missed games. And he didn't. And I think, like, that goal he scored the other night, that one-timer from, you know, from the left side, to me, that was classic Cole Caulfield. It was a hammer of a shot, right on the money. You know, and he's done that time and time again. I think he's been doing that all season. He just hasn't been doing it as consistently. So, like, the shot power's been there. The shot accuracy has been a little bit iffy. So, I mean, you know, the shoulder surgery doesn't affect your accuracy. It might affect your power. So to me, it's just a matter of just getting his feel back for it. And I think he will, and he'll be fine. And I mean, historically, and he hasn't been in the league that long to say historically, but he's been a bit streaky. So you throw those bunch of factors together. And I think that's what influences point total this year. The big thing for me is that, you know, I think he's still that player. I think he's still that guy. And I don't have any worries about him.
I'm glad you said that, Dolly, because I was a bit worried. I was, like, because I had higher expectations goal-wise, you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. But
you're right, though. Like, he did become a more well-rounded player this season. Even his passing, too, man. Like,
100%.
He's been making some really nice passes, and it makes the power play that much more dangerous, too, that he's not always going to shoot. You know what I mean? That he can make that extra pass. Like, he's not gonna rip it right away now. Like normally when Caulfield's getting the pockets, it's coming off his stick in an instant.
100%. And I mean, you look at the power play, you look at the penalty kill actually that's facing that top power play unit all the time. And they're just taking Caulfield away. They are just taking him away. And for the most part, we don't have, I mean, Suzuki is a fantastic player, and obviously he'll probably get 30 goals this season. So not to say that he's not a threat, but, you know, we don't have another elite goal scorer on our roster, no. I would say. So when you take away him as an option, the power play's got to get really creative. Like, it's got to be Slavkovsky or a bumper pass to Newhook to Suzuki to kind of open up that space. Whereas when you got some guy who can just hammer the puck, sometimes it simplifies your power play. All you got to do is just, like, look at Washington. Just get it to Ovechkin, you know, and he'll put it on and he'll score. And then you recover it again. So to me, it's just, it's a bunch of factors. And I think it'll move forward and it'll look good and he'll be all right.
Crazy thought, Gary. I got a crazy thought that it just came in my head and I got to get it out. Oh, yeah. So you were talking about that on the power play, having another guy that can, you know, let a bomb go. Slavkovsky's been doing a pretty good job. And when you think about it, like, the better Slavkovsky gets, like, if he keeps working on his shot, the better he gets on the power play, the better Caulfield's going to get too, because he's going to get more opportunities. They're not going to be leaning towards Caulfield as much.
Especially that Masson knows he exists now.
But what I was thinking, like, and this is so off tangent, you're not going to do it. Like, 100% not going to do it. But if you had a guy like Jack Eye, where Slavkovsky's sitting, like, just blasting it every time.
Absolutely.
They're going to be forced to take away that slap shot. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. It's Slavkovsky, yeah, left shot? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 107 mile hour one timer from that point. Is you got to defend that too.
You got to, man. That's coming at you like a bullet. I mean, you don't have to take Slavkovsky off the power play. Like, I'm just saying, you could switch something up. You know what I mean?
Well, say if Matt. Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
I feel like it's worth a shot. I feel like it's, you know, it's the end of the season. There's only, what, a handful of games left. Yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to it. If I was a coach, man, I'd be trying it. Jeez, he'd be on my first line of folks.
He would be on your first line.
First line center.
I mean, to me, it would be, well, yeah, Slavkovsky moves into the high slot, which he does sometimes anyways, and Newhook comes out if you're going to put him in there.
That's what I was thinking.
You know.
Suzuki stays, obviously.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you know, Madison comes out and Lane Hudson goes in, and then Jacka goes in, and that's about it.
Oh, now you're talking. Like,
now that's crazy.
Now the hamster's turning the wheel, man. We should apply. We should, though.
To the Montreal coaching staff?
As soon as they get fired, I think we're up next.
Oh, 100%. Gordon's up there listening to this, be like, guys, how come you're not listening to this stuff?
He's looking at his list. He's like, okay, first Michel Therrien, Claude Julien, Matt and Gary.
Yeah.
Michel Therrien,
Claude Julien. Claude Julien.
Oh, man. So do you got a beer bit of the week or what? I did one last.
Did you?
Right? Yeah, I did. I did Slavkovsky one, 2 goals.
Right, you did. You did. Yeah. You did 2 goals, Slavkovsky, and he let you down.
Come on, man. I got like 8 beer in the fridge right now.
Yeah, you better not drink them.
Come get them.
Don't drink my beer. We play what? We're playing Vancouver.
Vancouver's up next.
Tomorrow night.
Lots of good talent in Vancouver.
There is lots of good talent in Vancouver. All right, so who's the big gun in Vancouver right now? Let's see. Is it Elias Pettersson?
Derek Dorsett. Pettersson, yeah.
That's he's got Pettersson. Pettersson.
Petey Bird.
He's the big boy there in Vancouver. So I'm going to bet on Slavkovsky, man. Why wouldn't I?
Go for it. Make him break my heart again.
I'm going for it. All right, so Elias Pettersson has got 82 points on the season.
That's not bad.
Not bad, right? 33 goals, 49 assists for 82 points in 69 games. But I'm going to bet that our beautiful, big first overall pick is going to have more points in the game tomorrow night than Elias Pettersson. That's my prediction, man. I'm going to put a half case on it. And not more goals, but more points than Pettersson in tomorrow night's game. And suck on that.
Don, that means I can drink 2 beer before I go to bed. I got 2 to play with.
That's what you think.
Yeah.
Don't get too excited.
Man. It's been a good time.
Always a good time. Listen, everyone out there in YouTube land and our, you know, on all the podcasts, you know, if you like our show here, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, you know, ask some questions, make a comment, make fun of Junkie, because, I mean, why not? Make fun of me, because I'm an easy target. But don't bet against me, because I'm going to win this beer bet of the week. And from everyone here on the Fix Podcast, man, from Junkie, GK.
Well, see you next time.
Bye-bye.